From WXXI News, this is Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And a big welcome to Unleash the Pet Show, our monthly look at pets and their people, and your chance to ask questions to our guests as we talk about animal care. In studio today, we've got Dr. Peggy Satterman of All Cats Care Center in Webster, and Dr. Liz Furterbar from Greece Animal Hospital. You can ask them a question about your pet by calling us at 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. Or you can tweet your question to the hashtag Unleashed or to our producer, Megan Mack. She's on Twitter at MMackMedia. M-A-C-K, by the way. MMackMedia. So we're going to be focusing, I think, somewhat on cats this hour, but not exclusively. If you've got other questions as well, Dr. Furterbar is happy to help with that. Liz, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
And Dr. Peggy's here, as her clients know her. Dr. Peggy, it's nice to see you in studio. How are you?
I am well, and I am delighted to be here, Kevin.
This is, for many of our listeners, I think, a good chance once a month to kind of hear, get their questions answered, but also to kind of hear what other people are going through with their animals. And we'll focus a little bit more on cats to start. But if you want to call the program, you can do that, and we'll start taking your questions in just a few minutes. I want to start with a question that came from a program a few months back on this show, which is the kind of food our animals should be eating. And one of our guests weighed in and said dry cat food can be like, I don't want to be flippant, but they were saying it can be almost addictive, that it is, that cats can love it as long as your cat doesn't have dental problems or pain, but that dry food, it's harder for them to regulate how much they're eating. Dr. Peggy, what do you think?
If a cat is supplied all the food in one dish for the entire day, yes, they may very well overeat. And in dry food, there are, depending on the food, there is a majority of carbohydrates. So, as we all know, simple carbs add on the fat.
Okay. Do you prefer wet food over dry?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, for all the reasons we just talked about, or somebody walks in and says, I've been doing dry food for years, my cat's in double digits, why make the change?
A number of reasons. First of all, cats are not hardwired to drink water. And just to give a little background why, they evolved in the desert, obviously not a lot of water there. And the diet on which they evolved, mice and little critters, is 75% moisture. So in their evolutionary setting, they derived almost all of their fluid intake from their diet, so they didn't have to think about drinking water. In dry food, there's on average 10% moisture. In canned food, again, on average 75. You'll find some, you know, a little more, but on average 75. So if a cat eats exclusively dry food, in my experience, they're what we call subclinically dehydrated, which means on physical exam, we're not going to see they're dehydrated. But if it's a healthy cat that perhaps is undergoing an elective surgery like a dental, then in the blood work, in the urine, we will see that that individual is dehydrated. Now, dehydration in any individual is not a good thing. What concerns me most in kitties is that the second cause of death in cats is kidney disease. Dehydration certainly affects that.
Dr. Furterbar, what do you think about wet versus dry food?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it is going to depend on the cat. I have had some cats that have been eating dry food their entire lives, and sometimes they absolutely refuse to eat the wet food. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of it is taking into those considerations, such as kidney disease, which mm-hmm. is a huge factor in the health of these animals, and just making sure that it's something that's going to be the appropriate diet for them. A cat that is having kidney disease, I would absolutely recommend trying to get an increased water content. One great way to do that is by feeding canned food. But I think there are certainly some kitties that don't want to make the switch, or sometimes it's a little bit more convenient for the owners to be feeding a dry food. If you're going to be away overnight, I want to make sure that wet food isn't sitting out and that's the only thing that the pet is getting, because it's not the kind of thing that you can leave out day after day. You do have to make sure that it's going to be fresh wet food, of course. And I know that a lot of our cat owners are going to be dedicated enough to do that. But we also have to listen to our cats and making sure that it's something that's palatable to them and tastes good that they'll eat.
Well, I'm thinking of my almost four-year-old son, Reese, and I'm thinking about our cats when we switched from dry to wet food. And there's one parallel that I wonder if it makes sense. I'll ask both of you this, because any parents know that occasionally children can be obstreperous when it comes to food at the dinner table.
Shocking.
Right. And, you know, sometimes my wife and I will just say, hey, it's you don't have to eat it. It's okay. But we're not eating anything else. This is what's for dinner, for example. And that has been pretty effective. He's a great kid and great eater, but that's been pretty effective. I wonder if you are really determined to make a switch from, say, dry food to wet food, and you have the same mentality with a cat, for example, you think, well, they don't want the wet food. Well, animals get used to something. But can you, Liz, can you take the mindset, well, that's all I'm going to give them, and if they don't eat it, they don't eat it, but eventually they will make the decision to eat?
Not with a cat.
Not with a cat?
Absolutely not. The question is going to be completely different for cats versus dogs. And with our felines that are sharing our homes and our lives, cats will sometimes starve themselves rather than eat something they don't want.
Wow.
Yes. And one thing that we have to be very careful about is the development of something called hepatic lipidosis. And what that means, it's actually when animals can get fatty deposits in their livers. That can end up being a life-threatening problem. And we see it most frequently in a little bit overweight kitty cats that haven't been eating for a while. If the cat is refusing the food, the best thing to do is to place a small amount of the old food out, as well as the new food, so that they still have that as a backup, and to try to mix the foods together slowly. Never take away an animal's old food and try to make a fast adjustment. That can cause some GI upset and make them a little sick to their stomach. And definitely never try to force a cat into starvation to change them over to a new food. Absolutely would not recommend that.
But dogs, you can do that with. Dogs will eat.
Most dogs will eventually eat if they get hungry enough. But again, we never want to starve an animal into changing their dietary preference. And we always want to go nice and slow with these guys. It's very important to mix the old and the new food together over time.
Dr. Peggy, should we expect that if we make a change in food of any kind for our cats, that if we see, are they more likely to vomit for a little while just in reaction to it? Is that, should we be troubled by that? Is that normal?
Anytime a cat, well, let me start this way.
Yeah.
Cats vomit more than other animals.
Yeah, they sure seem to.
and anyone who's a cat owner, I'm sure, knows that. But if it's other than a hairball, then there's a reason for that vomiting, and it needs to be addressed. Okay, so if a kitty is vomiting from a new diet, then I would remove that diet and try something else. And as Liz said, cats will starve themselves. And I always tell my clients that anything you change with a cat is a process. You have to be very, very slowly and very persistent, because kitties are indeed stubborn.
Well, an email from a listener named Pam says, we have two cats, both of them outdoor cats. One of them seems to be a hunter, the other does not. The one that's a hunter occasionally brings back small rodents. I always find it disgusting, and often he seems to want to eat them. Should I be concerned about the impact on his diet if he's eating what he catches? Peggy?
Well, that's his normal diet, number one. And the important thing to know if cats are eating these little critters are to know that they are going to develop intestinal parasites, tapeworms and roundworms. Tapeworms of all intestinal parasites are the most benign, but, you know, to see those little segments is not a fun thing for people. Roundworms can cause problems in people, especially like your son. I'm sure he doesn't have the personal hygiene that we have, doesn't wash his hands as frequently. So if somehow he gets some stool on his hands, maybe the kitty has gone to the bathroom and there's a little debris in his fur, and he gets his hands in that, he can develop roundworms.
So there is a risk involved there. How likely is it if you have a cat that's an outdoor cat that is eating mice, rodents, whatever it's catching, how likely are those tapeworms, roundworms? Is it
100%.
100%.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
But we have wonderful antiparasitics that to my clients, I recommend that if they're indoor-outdoor kitties, they're going to be hunting. You know, even if the owners never see the little critters on their doorstep, they are going to be hunting. And I recommend once a quarter that those kitties should have some sort of medication to rid them. And something that I'm sure many people are totally unaware of, given the life cycle of roundworms, cats and dogs always, throughout their life, have roundworms. We can never totally clear roundworms from a pet's body.
Okay. Liz, can you weigh in that as well for Pam's question? And because now I'm thinking about pet owners like myself. I've only ever had indoor cats, so This is why I'm probably pretty ignorant about roundworms, tapeworms that might show up if the animal's outside and hunting. Cats are great predators. We know that. But does that mean that you need to make an adjustment? If you get a cat, you get a kitten, it's going to be an outdoor kitten, do you need to make an adjustment then based on the fact they're going to be outside, they're going to be hunting?
Sure. So I completely agree with Dr. Peggy in that these animals should be prophylactically dewormed. They are going to be exposed to these parasites in the environment, and there is the potential for zoonotic disease, which means diseases that people can get from animals and vice versa, diseases that we can give to our pets. So that's absolutely something that we should be aware of. I agree with the recommendation of deworming these kitties 3 or 4 times a year to make sure that we're hitting those parasite life cycles. The other thing that we can do is there are actually monthly parasite preventions as well that animals can get that can protect them against a disease called heartworm. And that's one other thing that we need to be worried about in our outdoor pets. Heartworm disease is transmitted by mosquitoes. One heartworm can bite a cat or a dog and pass that on. We don't have a cure for heartworm disease in cats. I would absolutely rather these outdoor cats be on prevention to stop them from ever getting that parasite than trying to deal with the problem once it comes along for them. They should definitely be on prevention.
Well, cats are great predators. Let's get our first break in, and when we come back, we're going to find out if your cat is such a good predator that it would kill you if it could get a chance. This headline has been making the rounds, and we're going to dig into the source of why USA Today, the Daily Mail, have proclaimed your cat to be a would-be murderer. So short break. We'll also take your phone calls if you have any questions about your pets, cats or otherwise. It's 844-295-TALK to call Unleashed right now. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Short break and more Unleashed next.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the financial advisors of the Sartini Group at Morgan Stanley, 585-987-6053. Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC. From Natural Pet Foods Company, helping people make diet choices for their pets, offering frozen and grain-free foods and foods for pets with special needs, 766 Clinton Avenue in the South Wedge, naturalpetfoodscompany.com. And All Cats Care Center, a full-service feline veterinary hospital offering medical and surgical care and boarding. All Cats Care Center, where cats come first. More online at allcatscarecenter.com.
Welcome back to Unleash the Pet Show, and we're going to get to some of your questions that have come in online. I see the phone starting to ring. You can call 844-295-TALK if you've got a question about your animals. 844-295-8255. Dr. Peggy Satterman from All Cats Care Center in Webster's here. Dr. Elizabeth Furterbar, Liz is from Greece Animal Hospital, so you can call Dr. Furterbar as well. And of course, I'm Evan Dawson, your host. So before we get to some of your phone calls, I want to ask sort of a strange question here. Does your cat want to kill you? For the 43 million U.S. households with domestic cats, it seems like an obvious no. But a new study has recently generated headlines, including this one from USA Today. Your cat may want to kill you, study finds. Well, here's what happened. Three researchers from Edinburgh published an article in the Journal of Comparative Psychology called Personality Structure in the Domestic Cat, Scottish Wildcat, Clouded Leopard, Snow Leopard, and African Lion, a comparative study. The researchers asked cat owners and then zookeepers to give assessments of the animals' personalities. That seems to be the basis for the confusion, but I wanted to find someone in the professional field who can help me understand what is going on here. And John, let's go ahead and listen to that piece right now. Maybe you've seen the video of a young woman playing a flute. Eventually, her cat saunters up, and then...
The cat lunges at the girl, and for the most part, the girl seems to think it's funny. But there is a flash of fear in her response, the kind of fear that says, wait, is my cat actually interested in killing me? Okay, it sounds ridiculous to me too, but the video I just described is embedded in an article from the Daily Mail titled, Cats Are Neurotic, and They're Probably Also Trying to Work Out How to Kill You, Say Researchers. It's even more extreme than the USA Today headline. So I headed out to a place where there's someone who can sort this out.
Hi, this is Dr. Bob Lamb. I'm the owner of Cats Exclusively Veterinary Hospital.
Technically Bushnell's Basin, right?
We're in Bushnell's Basin. Our mailing address is Pittsford, and we pay taxes to Parenton.
That is the classic Rochester story. Yeah. It really is.
Dr. Bob has a passion not only for cats, but for history and data. Good data. The kind that is not mangled by newspapers. I asked him to check out the USA Today and Daily Mail stories.
Their wording was bad, to say the least. To read it specifically, they said the worst part was, if you ever thought your cat was anxious, insecure, or aggressive toward you, you aren't making it up. If they were bigger, they probably would consider killing you. That's an overreach of just amazing proportions. It's going to scare the heck out of people. They said that lions, out of all the wild cats, share the most consistent traits with house cats. And then that was interpreted as cats and lions are the same. Cats, if they get a chance, would eat you. You know, it's ridiculous.
So are you saying that the news media has trouble with scientific studies?
Was it Mark Twain? You know, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. You can make a study say almost anything you wanted to. It wasn't just the study, it was the wording of it. You know, they didn't, it almost like they wanted to start an argument. Just looking at the wording, they interpreted the study with a significant slant, and I think they may have wanted to start a fight.
But here's the problem, Dr. Bob. You know, you've got some people who have cats or have friends who have cats, and they say, that cat is not very friendly. That cat's given me the side eye. You know, that cat is all of these stereotypes about cats, and they want to put that headline to use and say, well, that makes sense to me. That cat, if it was bigger, probably would kill me.
Cats are not pack animals like dogs. A lot of it depends on whether the cat was exposed to people growing up. A lot of people adopt cats who were strays. They didn't get that bonding experience when they were 4 weeks old, 8 weeks old. And that plays a part in it. Cats are solitary too, but I have a cat who goes and walks with us. My boys and I walk in the woods, he goes with us. He goes and visits the neighbors. Cats have a lot more personality than people think. It's very common that we talk to people who have only owned dogs and they adopt cats or are exposed to cats and are just amazed by their personality. So cats do get kind of a bad rap. They are solitary in that regard, but they've done amazing things. I had a client who had a cat that on two occasions woke up the wife by just patting her in the face till she woke up while her husband was in a diabetic coma. That happened twice. They do bond with people, there's no question about it.
Do you have some clients who ask you to sort of psychoanalyze their cats? Well, now this cat's behaving this way. Sometimes a change in behavior is related to health problems, I would imagine. But do you get asked to psychoanalyze cats?
We will get asked why a cat's doing certain things, not really from a psychoanalysis standpoint, but in terms of behavior and how disease affects behavior. So yeah, there are cats who will vocalize, who become withdrawn, who become overly affectionate, and often there's an underlying reason. The nice thing is more and more people are starting to appreciate cats and the amazing bonding you can have with cats. The whole pet therapy approach, where they take animals into hospitals, and I have a friend who's been doing it for 20 years, involve mostly dogs. They are incorporating cats into it too. And again, cats are amazingly good with sick people. We just had a client with an autistic son who adopted a cat, and the cat bonded with the boy instantly. So it's pretty amazing sometimes.
It turns out that while domestic house cats have some personality traits that can overlap with, say, lions or snow leopards, it's not by any means a perfect match. It's like saying a human being will have some personality traits that overlap with cats, which is true, but hardly indicative that we're the same. Even the researchers who put together the study that caused all of this confusion have had a good laugh at the thought of murderous cats, or at least domestic cats. They say that wasn't the point at all. Feeling relieved, I decided to make one more visit. I stopped home to talk to my own two cats about this. This is Sarah, all black, 14 years old, very chatty, and very honest. She's never lied to me.
So if you could dramatically increase in size, would you try to kill me? I'm going to take that as a no.
Yeah, you know, we had a little fun with this piece, but the good news is, and our thanks to Dr. Bob out at Cats Exclusively in Bushnell's Basin, Peggy, cats are not interested in killing us, are they?
Not that I'm aware of. I have four of them, and they sleep on my bed every night, and I wake up every morning. I don't think so.
Yeah, unfortunately, the media does sort of butcher some of these studies. Liz, what do you think?
Well, I've certainly have some patients that didn't appreciate vaccines or temperatures being taken, but I hope they don't have it out for my head.
Yes. Yes. So if you saw that headline, basically that was just the media misinterpreting that, yes, your house cat does have some similar personality traits to a lion, but it also has similar personality traits to you, and your cat doesn't want to cook dinner. Your cat wants to eat. So let's get to the phones. We've got some people who've been waiting to join the conversation here on Unleash, the Pet Show. Susan in Shortsville first up. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I'm gonna, hopefully you won't hit a dead zone. I'm on my hands-free.
Okay.
I have a question about, I have a kitty that we, through trial and error, we finally put her on the Royal Canin hydrolyzed protein as a dry food because she had a kind of a permanent case of looseness, shall we say. And that has helped tremendously, but I've noticed lately she's not passing daily. She's not having daily bowel movements, and I don't know if I should worry about that or not. But if I gave, she at first didn't like wet food at all, and then she had the runs from it. So we figured out, we think she was allergic to all sorts of dry food. She was confiscated from a hoarder, so she has... Mm-hmm. Very poor nutrition, I'm assuming, when she was little.
Well, I'll start with Dr. Peggy. What do you make of that, Dr. Peggy?
Well, it sounds like your kitty is mildly constipated, and that's not a good thing for your cat, obviously. In the wintertime, you know, we have central heat on, and it dries. My skin is dry this winter, and it also takes moisture from our kitties. So something maybe you can do, your kitty might not eat it if you do this, but you can put some water in the dry food, see if that helps. Some cats don't like their dry food to be moist, but that may work. Also, there are, Royal Canin makes some canned, they call them hypoallergenic foods, novel protein foods. And if you very slowly, again, it's a process with cats, if you very slowly transition them over to this canned food, you know, like I said earlier, there's much more moisture in canned than there is dry. That may help her stool problem as well.
Okay.
My sister uses a sort of a water fountain thing on the theory that makes them more interested in drinking. What's your opinion on that?
I agree. I agree 100%. Cats are pressured to drink fresh water. That's like why they like to drink from the faucet. Cats are so darn smart. You know, I say, I'm sorry for people to insult people who have dogs if I do, but
careful.
Cats are smarter.
Oh, man. We're going to spend the rest of the hour in this war.
So, again, cats don't drink tainted water because they know it'll make them sick.
So they like fresh sources. They like a running faucet, right?
Yes.
I mean, Liz, you were nodding right away at that, yeah?
Yes. I have had several clients that have asked similar questions. You know, how do I get my cat to drink more water? I am 100% on board with trying the fountains for these guys. Again, making sure to introduce it nice and slow with anything else. I do recommend not putting the fountain right next to the cat's dishes, because a new thing like that, it might make a little sound. It's a new object in their environment that might make them a little nervous, and we certainly don't want them to feel nervous going by their food. So having it across the room or in a different room, getting them used to it, and then gradually moving it to their food to encourage that water intake.
All right, Susan, I hope that helps. Let's go to Kurt in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Kurt.
Hi, everyone. A great show, as usual.
Thanks.
I have a situation where my fiancé and I are moving into a house soon together. She has two cats, the brother and sister, 8 years old. I have a house cat that's not quite two, very rambunctious.
This will go perfectly smoothly. I don't even know why you're calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically we're going to be introducing cats together into a new environment. How do we do that?
Very slowly.
Very slowly. Yeah. It can be very difficult if your fiancé's cats are very tolerant and your cat's very tolerant. Might not be an issue. There are a number of things you can do to make the transition go more slowly. One of the things is you can start now even. Take something of your fiancé's that she wears, bring it to your house. You bring it to your house. But before you do that, have your fiancé rub it all over her cats so it smells like her cats. And same thing with you. Take something from you, rub it all over your cat, take it to your fiancé's home. And so at least they'll be somewhat familiar with that smell. Now, when you begin living in the same home, isolate either your fiancé's cats or your cat and leave them there for a period of time. If you can manage it, you leave the door closed for a period of time. Put the food for your fiancé's cats and your cats right on either side of the door so both cats know there's another cat on the other side, but they can associate these cats with a pleasurable experience. We all know kitties love to eat. Another thing, if you can arrange it, is after they're somewhat knowledgeable that there's another cat there, probably how it smells, is to put a screen. You can stack baby gates so your cat can't get in, your fiancé's cats can't get out, and open the door. That way, the kitties see each other, they smell each other, they can become very familiar with each other without having physical contact. You can put your cat away, let the other kitties come out so they get the lay of the land, they can smell everything in the house, including your cat, and be more comfortable that way. And all this time, while the cats have not had any physical association, you can keep rubbing them with the same, rub your cat with a towel, then rub the other cats and rub your cat and the other cats, and eventually their scent is similar. And kitties recognize very much by scent. That's a few things, but there are a ton of things. If you look at Dr. Buffington's website, he is a professor at the University of Ohio. On the Veterinary Medicine University of Ohio website, you will find him. And he has a wonderful website about behavior, cat behavior.
All right. So, and Liz, any other quick ideas to add on that here?
Yeah, those are great suggestions and certainly the first steps that I would recommend that anyone take. Just going one step further with that, absolutely the scent swapping is very important. Once they're a little bit more comfortable with them, you can actually start to switch their locations. So, for example, if your fiancé's kitties have been in the bathroom and your cat has been having the run of the house, after a day or two, switch them. Put your cat in the bathroom and let her two cats roam around. And that way, again, being exposed to the smells, going all over the house, getting used to each other slowly. So just a little bit of cat swapping locations as well.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's a process. Everything with cats is a process.
Kurt, good luck.
And congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations and good luck to you, Kurt. Thanks for the phone call. If you have questions for our guests, you can call 844-295-TALK. Questions about your pets, your animals, 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Dr. Peggy Statterman from All Cats Care Center in Webster is here. Dr. Liz Furterbar is here from Grease Animal Hospital. And on the subject of the way cats interact, Kurt's comment sparked a question in my mind that, you know, again, I've got cats that are 15 and 14, a mom and a daughter, and they've been together. I mean, now they're just like, I mean, they don't really act like mom and daughter. I guess they kind of do at times. But I want to say this was a few months ago. I was in the kitchen, and I heard the most awful sound of them fighting. Anybody's heard cats fighting, animals fighting, but this was really nasty to the point where I instantly reacted and yelled, hey, and want to break it up. Turns out that I guess one of our cats was at the front door, and outside the front door, because we have indoor cats, outside the front door was a neighborhood cat who'd come right up to the glass and was antagonizing one of our girls. So our cat on the inside is all fired up, and then our other cat walks by sort of unsuspecting, and the cat who was fired up took it out on her, kind of placed her aggression, you know, not on the outdoor cat, because who she couldn't get to, but on the other cat that we had inside. Is that something I should be worried about, the way they kind of interact with outdoor versus indoor, Liz?
Yeah, so what you're describing actually is a classic example of what we call redirected aggression, and you're interpreting that 100% correct. So the one cat was upset by the cat that was outside. She couldn't get to that. She could get to the inside cat, and so she took that out on that cat.
I mean, it was really nasty.
I know. It can be really scary, absolutely. So what happens in those circumstances is you can't get to what's actually making you mad, so you take it out on what's there. The good thing about that is the vast majority of the time, if they're not in that situation, then they're not going to have the initial instigating factor, the outside cat. And so then when that initiating factor isn't there, they typically won't have another incidence of redirected aggression when that's going on. Obviously, you can't stop the neighborhood kitty who's wandering around outside from coming up to your door.
Sure.
Do you have any type of blinds or anything on the door?
Yeah, sure. Glass? I mean, this is just a glass, you know, I could have closed the main door.
Sure.
But how long do I have to let a cooling off period happen, for example?
Yeah, for these guys, most of the time, once they've stopped having that aggressive behavior, if you give them an hour or two and again, you know, a little bit of a timeout, bring them back together, most of the time they should be okay. It was that instigating factor that caused that behavior. Do you have anything else to add, Dr. Peggy?
No, I 100% agree. But one thing I would like to mention, because the first reaction to all of us is try to get the cats apart. Be so very careful, because the cats, again, this is misdirected aggression. If you get in the middle of that, you will be hurt.
So
be very careful. Throw a towel over them. You know, if you have a water spray bottle, spray them. That might work. You know, a broom to kind of separate them. I mean, obviously, you're not going to hit them with the broom.
I used my voice. My wife says I've got a voice that
commanding
projects.
Voice.
A voice that projects. So thankfully, in this case, I raised my voice and they separated. So, anyway.
We hear kitties.
What am I hearing? It sounds like a bunch of animals in the background. Thankfully, you're not hearing any animals in the studio. Let's get a short break in. And did you know, by the way, that at least 30% of cats over the age of 3 have health issues that need to be addressed by a veterinarian? Coming up next, WXXI's Beth Adams talks to a veterinarian about the value of regular checkups and how to look for subtle signs that your cat might be sick. This is Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. And if you've got a question or a comment about your pet's health, you can give us a call, 844-295-TALK, or you can tweet your question to the hashtag Unleashed, or to our producer on Twitter, Megan Mack, at mmackmedia. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/unleashedpetshow. More straight ahead. Coming up in our second hour, the very latest in breast care. What should we know about false positives? What happens to a woman who gets a false positive? What are the implications down the line? We'll explore the very latest on that. We'll look at mammograms, guidelines for annual screenings, when they should and should not start, and we will answer any questions you have on the subject. Join us next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Major funding for Unleashed the Pet Show on Connections comes from Rufus Kendig, the Richard T. Bell Foundation, and from the Lilliputian Foundation. Little grants making a big difference.
Welcome back to Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And Dr. Peggy, before we move along here with our discussions, I know on this subject of misdirected aggression, right?
Or redirected.
Redirected aggression.
Misdirected, redirected, same thing.
So you've experienced it as well, not only professionally, but in your cats as well?
Yes. I was kind of stunned by what happened. So I lived with someone else who had cats, and one of my cats did not like this other person's cats, and so he would chase them. And so one day they were in this screaming contest.
And tussle, yeah.
Yeah, and the other cat ran upstairs. So I stepped in front of the stairs so my cat couldn't pursue this other cat. And my cat jumped on my leg and scratched and bit me.
Ooh. So you were the recipient of the redirected aggression.
Right.
So.
I didn't even touch him. I just was trying to physically separate them with my body. So be careful.
Well, good advice. And I think that speaks exactly to why Dr. Peggy was saying, you know, if you're going to want to break it up, know that you step in, you know, that could be at least momentarily a dangerous situation. So, but you're okay.
I survived.
Yes. Let me grab, before we get to Beth's piece, let me grab Alex in Rochester, who's our guest now on Connections. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, Evan. So I have a kitty who is about going on 4 now. And when he was young, he actually had seizure episodes that was initially pointed towards epilepsy. And he's actually since grown out of these. But the result of this was a lot of blood tests. And he was going into the vet and got a lot of needle pokes. So now he is absolutely terrified of even the carrying case to get him to the vet. I'm just wondering if there's anything that we could do to kind of either calm him down before he gets in the case or just to help facilitate future vet visits. Because, I mean, we want to stay up on the checkups, but it's very difficult.
All right, Alex, stay on the line. And that is a hard one when an animal associates something negative or has a negative experience. So, Dr. Peggy, I'll start with you. What would you tell him?
Well, first of all, you can leave the carrier in an area where your cat hangs out, and then he becomes accustomed to having the carrier around all the time. You can put treats in your carrier so he goes in and, again, associates the carrier with a pleasant experience. There's also something called Feel Away, which is comes in a spray and also little wipes more recently, and this is synthetic pheromones from around kitty's cheeks, and that's a pleasant, a welcoming type of pheromone that may calm him down a little bit. It can be hard to get kitties once they've had a negative experience. It can be very hard to make them realize that every experience is not going to be negative.
Liz?
Yeah, along with that, I'm absolutely in agreement with doing the treats and doing the feel away. Is this a pretty food-motivated kitty, likes his grub?
Alex? Is this a food-motivated cat, would you say, Alex?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, perfect. That'll make this a little bit easier. Along with the treats, then, what you can do actually is gradually move his food bowl closer and closer to the carrier. Mm-hmm. And eventually what I would recommend is once he's comfortable with that, you know, again, slow and steady is the name of the game with cats. Once he's comfortable eating close to the carrier, eventually start moving his food bowl in it so that he's actually consuming his entire meal in that space. Mm-hmm. Once he starts being comfortable with that, you can actually shut the door just for a minute and then let him out, you know, then leave him alone for a while, let him kind of adjust to that so that little by little we're working into him being in the carrier for longer and longer periods and trying to make it a positive experience. For a lot of animals, especially those food motivated ones, having food near them, having the treats, eating in the carrier will make it a positive association, which is what we want. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Alex.
Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. Alex's story reminds me of when our in-laws had a wonderful dog who was a mix, I think a German Shepherd Lab mix, and he was the nicest dog, and they were going to take him out on the boat on Cuca Lake, and they forgot he still had his electric fence collar on. And this poor dog gets on the boat, and all of a sudden starts zap, 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 zap. He wouldn't even get on the dock for a couple of years. But, you know, it took some time, but they did their best. So, Let's turn now to a different question here on Unleashed as we focus on feline health today. I want to turn to WXXI's Beth Adams, who spoke with veterinarian Amber Kucher of Cats and Critters in Rochester. Dr. Kucher says she's concerned that cats aren't getting the care they always need.
And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, Dr. Kuchar is my veterinarian. She's taken great care of my cats over the years. And Dr. Kuchar, you were telling me that you were worried because cats that are in your practice are being underserved. And what did you mean by that?
I mean that there are cats not coming in as regularly as we would like for them to come in. You know, we may see them when they're young, and then they won't appear again until they're middle-aged or older middle-aged. Disease processes that started as, you know, very quiet and subtle that we may have picked up on early are now more prominent. They've done more damage, and we're not in as good a position to help them as we might have been if we could have picked up on things earlier.
And you think this is especially true of cats, cats as opposed to maybe, and I know you don't have dogs in your practice, you do take care of other animals as well.
Right. Well, with cats, it's learning to pick up on those ever so subtle clues. As a prey animal, we don't often think of them as a prey animal, but they are both prey and predator. That prey side of them says, don't volunteer weakness or illness. That's going to get you into trouble. And so they are very quiet about things.
Meaning you don't pick up on illness or injury because they have an instinct to protect that.
Yes, they have an instinct to hide those things. So their signs of problems are very subtle.
What other barriers are there to people getting their cat in to the veterinarian?
Well, cats are notoriously savvy at avoiding being brought in. They pick up on their owner's distress when they are thinking about bringing the cats in. They tend to hide when that event starts to happen.
I've been there with the carrier.
We have all been there. I've turned over many couches in my lifetime in an attempt to get the cat out.
What tips do you have for people? Because I know that, and I've been a cat person for a long time, it's difficult even for me with 20 plus years of experience sometimes to get my cat to go in that carrier without really frightening her.
Yes.
What do you recommend?
You know, we all have cats and we all go through the same thing. So I know exactly what you're saying. And sadly, it's taken us a long, long time to try to really understand these animals better and out manipulate them, if you will, if we can. It's, to me, it's all a big game with them. But we're trying to leave their carriers out and feed them near it, put catnip in it, make those items a part of their normal environment, so it's not a scary place that only comes out when you go to the vet. And to try to manage our own stress level too, because cats are incredibly intuitive and they pick up on that right away, probably more than anything.
So we have cats who are difficult to get in the carrier. We have cats that hide symptoms of illness and injury. That might be some of the reasons you're not seeing them. What about money? Some people worry, what is it going to cost when I bring this cat into the vet?
Certainly with pet ownership comes the financial aspect of it too. And that is something that should be planned for when we take on that sort of responsibility. You know, there are certain basic costs that we should count on and prepare for. And then it's, you know, try to prevent if we can. We have a lot of ways now that we can help owners prevent diseases or pick up on them early so that their treatments are not as invasive or costly. That's really our main goal, two main goals, to prevent illness whenever we can and to intervene early when it's less expensive and invasive. At least 30%, and it depends on which resource you look at least 30% of cats over 3 have some form of a problem that we need to help with, whether it's weight management issues and animals being over-conditioned to the point where there's extra stress on their skeleton and increased potential for diabetes or dental disease, which, of course, our cats don't often smile at us, don't really want us fussing in their mouths. But these are things that we in the veterinary profession may be better at finding and pointing out and helping patients deal with these things early.
Do you think another aspect of this might be that people think cats are so independent and they can just take care of themselves? I don't need to take care of them by bringing them into the vet and getting them all upset.
Yeah, I think that's a very common perception. And really, on our pathway with cats, we're still very early in understanding. I mean, they were barn animals. They were self-sufficient. They kind of lived and died on by their own means. So it was a very different life. Now they're indoors, which certainly is a safer life for them, but they are still at risk for certain infectious disease, and certainly there are other problems that have become more prominent because they are fed more of an artificial diet at this point. They don't have a lot to do, so they're bored, they're eating too much. There are other issues that have become a problem because they are indoor cats. I do prefer cats to live an indoor life if they're happy that way. But we have to change our management for those cats in order to keep them healthier and happier as indoor cats.
If these signs and symptoms of illness or injury are pretty subtle when we're talking about felines, what are we looking for? Are there any little clues that could be noticed?
With cats, it's really all about behaviors. And it's knowing your pet, knowing your companion, to know what's normal for them as far as their eating habits, whether they vomit or have diarrhea, their weight. They're not going to necessarily cry and limp. They're just going to maybe hide more. They're under the bed. They're in the closet. They're not greeting you at the door. They're not sleeping with you at night. They're not eating as well.
Or they're drinking copious amounts of water.
Right. They're drinking a lot. They're urinating more. And especially in multi-cat households, it's difficult to know who's doing what. You need to be very watchful as a pet person. And it's easier for us in the hospital setting because if we know our patients, if we've had the opportunity of getting to know our patients over the years, we can see those changes a little bit more drastically often than their families do, whether it's because the signs were very subtle or whether it's an owner that is afraid and doesn't want to see that their pet is having some problems.
How often should people be bringing their cat to the vet minimum?
Minimum of once a year for young cats, healthy cats.
Young means what?
Young means after they've been spayed and neutered up until perhaps a year of, seven-ish. Once a year at that point is should be fine unless it's recommended they come in more often. Depending on their health and their situation, 7-8 plus may require that they or hope that they'll come in twice a year so that we can pick up on those changes more quickly. Remember that every year in a cat's life is a lot longer. 1 year is not just 1 year for them. They age more quickly. So having them come in twice a year, certainly over the age of 9 and 10 is optimal.
And we should point out, Dr. Kucher, we're not trying to make people feel bad. We're trying to help them take better care of their pets.
Absolutely.
Because we know how hard it is
to
get your animal to do something that frightens them or makes them uncomfortable.
Right, right. And, I hear regret often in folks who have passed that window of opportunity where now, the animal is very ill and our options are much more limited and the costs associated with treatment are much higher. People express a lot of regret. And it's really hard at that point. You don't want to make somebody who is already feeling badly feel worse, but you're hoping that at the same time they'll remember and come in more quickly so that we can help them earlier.
And our thanks to Beth Adams for that. In our last minute, some quick questions from listeners. Jack says, the question you started the program with cats roaming outside, there's also the danger of contracting toxoplasmosis. Liz, yes?
Yes, so that is definitely a disease process that we worry about with these guys, typically spread through fecal-oral ingestion. So we want to be careful about these kitties, absolutely.
Okay, Victoria in Rochester says, you should mention that cats kept indoors on average live twice as long as cats that go outdoors. And she says that generally, it's so much safer. Yes or no, Peggy? Twice as
yes
long?
And no. Yeah, yes and no. If you live somewhere where cats will not get squished by a vehicle, I think outdoor cats live just as long as indoor cats.
Okay, so twice as long does seem, does that seem like an, a little
I think twice as long is probably a bit much, but certainly we have to think about those environmental and disease hazards.
Okay, if we didn't get to your question this hour, we do Unleash the Pet Show every month, third Friday of every month, first hour. It's your chance to get your questions in, get through as many as we could with our wonderful guests this hour, and our thanks to Dr. Peggy Stadelman from All Cats Care Center in Webster. Dr. Peggy, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Dr. Liz Furterbar from Greece Animal Hospital. That's where you'll find Liz and Dr. Furterbar. Great seeing you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right, short break and next hour. If you have questions about breast care, health, mammogram screenings, guidelines, and more, this is your chance to get those questions answered as we continue on Connections.